Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely working our way through the story of the Stormlight Archive and the Cosmere. Overall, we're on book 3, Oathbringer. At this point, we'd normally be done with the first part by now.
Normally, but we're like less than halfway through, right?
No, we've got 3 more episodes left. So by this time next week, or next Monday should be the end of part 1.
Oh.
So that's still, I went and I looked back. That is still a good like 4 episodes longer than any of the other, than Words of Radiance or Wave Kings to get through part 1. But that's because part 1 of this book is long, but we're almost done with it.
There's a lot of setup.
There's a lot of setup. And we're going to get a pretty cool, like, the end of part 1 is pretty cool.
Like, there's already a lot happening, and it's still just setup.
It's still just setting shit up. Yep. Mango, do you remember what happened last time?
Shallan went to a few bars, learned that she can get drunk, but she can heal herself from being drunk. Mm-hmm. She got some information about the fact that there was another copycat murder.
Mm-hmm. And while she was doing this...
Oh, and she stabbed through her own hand and into someone else's hand and into a table, which was very interesting.
Yeah. And Vale was the one doing most of this.
Yeah, Vale. Not Shallan. Yeah. Shallan wasn't doing it.
Shallan does come out during that sequence every so
Shallan
often.
Shallan comes out when she gets drunk.
Yeah. Or when she's really flustered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that's just incentivizing her to create even more of a divide between herself and Vale. And we know how that's gonna go.
Yeah, it's fine. Dalinar had a pretty big moment.
Did he?
Dalinar is starting to remember Evie.
Oh yeah!
Yep.
Which means that the spell from the Night Watcher is kind of wearing off the same way it was for Liv.
Yes. Yes.
Which is concerning.
Concerning and interesting. And Kaladin is hanging out with Parchment still.
Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
This week, we start with chapter 19, which is titled The Subtle Art of Diplomacy. And it has Dalinar's flashback symbol.
And assuming it's probably not going to be that subtle.
It's 31 years ago. Dalinar sat in a feast hall as a storm raged outside. A man named Toh is talking with Gavilar.
I'm sorry, a man named Toh?
T-O-H.
Yeah, but his name is Toh.
Yeah, his name is Toh. And he's talking with Gavilar, asking him questions about how he kept people safe from high storms during war. He's not used to seeing so many soulcasters or shards in his homeland of Rira, or Eri, as an Alethkar. Only 4 High Princes stood against Gavilar at this point, and more of Dalinar's brother's time had been spent running his kingdom. Sadeas was holding court with a group of light eyes with uncertain loyalties, and if he left the conversation still worried over their loyalties, his wife would find ways to eliminate them. Dalinar looks for his knife to cut the pork, but can't find it. He thinks he
Wait, Sadeas has a wife at this point?
Sadeas is married at this point, yes.
Ew. Was he still... Is this a long time after
the first flashback?
Yeah.
The first flashback was sorry, I have to scroll back.
Or was he hooking up I'm just gonna put it as hooking up with captives while he was married.
It has been 3 years since that first flashback.
So uncertain.
He could have gotten married in this.
So uncertain.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, either way, he's a terrible person.
Horrific, still, yeah, regardless. But Sadeas is sussing out if these people are going to switch to Gavilar's side, and if they aren't going to, then his wife is going to have them all murdered.
So clearly she is also a very powerful woman.
And she's still alive in the present day.
She is? Are they still married?
Well, I mean, he's dead, so they're not.
Oh,
but
were they still married?
They were. There were a couple chapters in the first 2 books where she would, like, pop up and be like, what are we gonna do, Toril? How are we gonna kill them all? And he'd be like, let me do my thing, Eli. I'll figure it out. But she's still around.
Wait, his first name is Toril?
His first name was Toril.
Yeah. Dumb.
What a loser. Dalinar is looking for his knife to cut his pork, but he can't find it. He thinks that he lent it to Taleb. Toe is continuing to talk to Gavilar, subtly inquiring after the strength of House Colin. Dalinar sighed, then stood and walked to the door, holding his empty mug. Lost in thought, he threw aside the bar on the door, then shoved open and stepped outside. A sheet of icy rain suddenly washed over his skin, and wind blasted him fiercely enough that he stumbled. The high storm was at its raging height. Dalinar struck out into the storm. Gavilar talked more and more about things like legacy.
I'm sorry, Dalinar's just walking outside in a high storm?
He's just walking out into a high storm.
What had happened
to the fun of the fight, to riding into battle laughing? Thunder crashed and the periodic strikes of lightning were barely enough to see by. Dalinar found the particular bunker he was looking for and pounded on the door. No response. So he summoned his shard blade, slid the tip between the double doors, and sliced the bar open. He pushed open the door to find a group of wide-eyed armed men scrambling into defensive lines. Taleb, Dalinar said. Did I lend you my belt knife? My favorite one, with the white spine ivory on the grip? The tall soldier gaped at him. Your knife, Bright Lord? Lost the thing somewhere, Dalinar said. I lent it to you, didn't I? I gave it back, sir. You used it to pry that splinter out of your saddle, remember? Damnation, you're right. What did I do with that blasted thing? Dalinar left and strode back out into the storm.
He completely destroyed the lock, walked in with a shard blade, and they were like, what the hell? He was like, do you have my knife? No, sir. Oh, right. Okay, bye. Like, what?
Perhaps Dalinar's worries had more to do with himself than they did Gavilar. An explosive burst of wind drove him against the wall and he stumbled, then stepped backward, driven by instincts he couldn't define. A large boulder slammed into the wall, then bounced away. Dalinar glanced and saw something luminous in the distance, a gargantuan figure that moved on spindly glowing legs. Dalinar stepped back up to the feast hall, gave the whatever it was a rude gesture, then pushed open the door and strode back in. Streaming with water, he walked up to the high table.
Dalinar just flipped off some random animal and then just goes about his day.
Where he flopped into his chair. Wonderful. Now he was wet and he still couldn't eat his pork. Everyone had gone silent. A sea of eyes stared at him. So this is the second time that somebody has been out in a high storm and seen some fucking wild shit just walking around.
Technically this happened first, but...
Yeah. But Kaladin also saw some wild shit when he was stuck in the high storm with Shallan in Words of Radiance. So there's just apparently shit that walks around during the high storms. I cannot tell you what that is. I have no idea. But weird shit's happening. Who knows? There's still 6 books left, so I assume at some point we'll get an explanation of what that was. Gavilar asks him if everything is all right. Yeah. And Dalinar tells him about the missing knife. Toe excuses himself, and Gavilar says that Dalinar casually strolling out into the high storm had made an impression on the man. He says that Dalinar may have just proven to Toe that they're strong enough to protect him. Gavilar requested a new knife for Dalinar, and chastised his younger brother over his lack of decorum. Dalinar is distracted as Navani enters into the hall from the women's chambers. He tries to push away his desire for her. He yells for a servant to bring him more wine. Navani and Eli, Sadis's wife, slid into chairs next to Gavilar and Dalinar. They say that they've been assessing Toe's sister and found her to be a touch stupid but genuine like her brother. Gavilar says that Toe is a man without a home, and his only bargaining tool for protection was a set of shard plate that he had stolen from his homeland of Rira when he'd fled. Sadius comes over and joins the group, sliding into the same chair as Eli so that they each sit half on it. What are we discussing? Sadius asked, draping his arm around his wife's shoulder. We're talking about getting Dalinar married, Eli said. What? Dalinar demanded, choking on a mouthful of wine. Eli says that Toe and his sister will want more than just asylum. They'll want to join the royal bloodline. Dalinar took another long drink. You could try water sometime, you know, Dalinar, Sadius said. I had some rainwater earlier. Everyone stared at me funny. Gavilar says that they need this as it gives them the appearance of speaking for Alethkar. They want people from outside to come to him instead of the other high princes. A servant brings Dalinar a knife, but he's disappointed by its size. The group banters for a moment about it. Gavilar interrupts their banter, asking what defeated the Sunmaker, the last man that united Alethkar. He says that he had extended too far, trying to conquer too much of the world. The conquerors of the past had failed because they had never been happy with what they'd seized. They'd always reached for more. He asks Dalinar why they're at war, and says that they have to start thinking about what it means to build a kingdom. He tells Dalinar that he wants him to listen to the codes of war from the old days. Dalinar caught sight of something, a woman peeking into the room from the other feast hall. He leaned forward, curious. Toh's sister Evie was 18, maybe 19. But that hair, it made her stand out. He's only like 24 at this point. It's still a little weird, but it's no worse than Adolin and Shallan. But that hair, it made her stand out. She scampered across the feast hall to her brother. Eli teases Dalinar about how exotic Evie is. Dalinar grunted, then finally spotted a knife, in the hand hidden behind the back of a server clearing Gavilar's plates. Dalinar kicked at his brother's chair, breaking a leg off and sending Gavilar toppling to the ground. The assassin swung at the same moment, clipping Gavilar's ear but otherwise missing. Dalinar leaped to his feet, reaching over Gavilar and grabbing the assassin by the neck. He spun the would-be killer around and slammed him to the floor. Dalinar grabbed the knife from the table and pounded it into the assassin's chest. Gavilar sprang to his feet, shard blade appearing in his hand. He looked down at the assassin, then at Dalinar. Dalinar kicked at the assassin to be sure he was dead. He nodded to himself, righted his chair, sat down, then leaned over and yanked the man's knife from his chest. He washed it off in his wine, then cut a piece of his steak and shoved it into his mouth. Finally. Good pork, Dalinar noted. Across the room, Toh and his sister were staring at Dalinar. Thank you, Gavilar said. Dalinar shrugged. Sorry about killing him. You probably wanted to question him, eh? It's no stretch to guess who sent him, Gavilar said. I know I said I wanted you to free to make your own choice in regard to a bride, Gavilar said. But I'll do it, Dalinar said. Navani was lost to him. They're timid and careful, Navani noted. It might take more time to persuade them. Oh, I wouldn't worry about that, Gavilar said. Dalinar is nothing if not persuasive. And that is the end of the chapter.
That doesn't comfort me. That makes me think, like, aggressive persuasion.
They're looking for somebody to protect them right now, and Dalinar just walked out into a high storm, walked back, spotted an assassin, dropped him to the ground, stabbed him multiple times in the chest, and then used the knife to eat his food. It fulfills their desire for protection.
fair enough.
Yeah. Chapter 20, Cords to Bind. It has Kaladin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "However, with a dangerous spice, you can be warned to taste lightly. I would that your lesson may not be as painful as my own." From Oathbringer, Preface. Kaladin is teaching the parchment how to clean and bandage cuts. He teaches Saw, the parchment who had originally been his captor, how to make a stone axe. He tells Saw that they should march tonight, as they've been in one spot too long. Saw asks where a slave learned how to give orders and act like a light eyes. He says that he hates feeling like a child, needing Kaladin's help. They'd finally escaped, and now they were here following Elethi's orders again. He says the Voidspren isn't any better. She keeps telling them that they're free, then berates them for not obeying quickly enough. They were surprised that Kaladin couldn't see the Spren or hear the rhythms. Kaladin says that freedom is strange, as he'd spent his time finally free from enslavement, serving under another High Lord. Saw asks if Kaladin is worried that they'll use his teachings to make weapons to use against humans, and Kaladin says that they can choose not to fight, but Saw insists that the humans will never let them go free. Regardless, if they would, why shouldn't the Parshmen want to fight after what was done to them? He says that the humans will want to find a way to reverse what has happened, take the Parshmen's minds again. Kaladin says that perhaps they can show humanity that they're like regular people now. This angers Saw, as it implies that when they were different, they deserved slavery. He says that Kaladin is just showing that humans believe that they should be the ones to decide what happens to the Parshmen. Syl appeared and tells Kaladin that a high storm is coming in the next few days. "I can't do this, Syl," Kaladin whispered. "I can't spend time with these Parshmen. See their side." "Why?" "Because Saw's right. This is going to come to war. The Voidspren will drive the Parshmen into an army, and rightly so after what was done to them. Our kind will have to fight back or be destroyed." "Then find the middle ground." "Middle ground only comes in war after lots of people have died, and only after the important people are worried they might actually lose." "Storms, I shouldn't be here. I'm starting to want to defend these people. Teach them to fight." "I don't care. I don't dare. The only way I can fight the Voidbringers is to pretend there's a difference between the ones I have to protect and the ones I have to kill." And that is the end of the chapter.
That's depressing.
Kaladin is going through a time. He finally figured out his life. He figured out the world, and then immediately everything is lifted up on its head, and he's shown that, like, the beliefs that I held so strongly to aren't so true.
Yeah, but also, like, you're still othering an entire race and treating them all like the same people. Yeah. If humans aren't all the same, and you can't treat all humans the same, then you don't need to treat all listeners the same.
Yeah. He's and without getting too much into it, these Parshmen would not classify as listeners. They would go by a different name that I think has been said. They would be singers. The whole idea with the listeners was that they were the ones that escaped. That were hidden on the Shattered Plains.
Oh, so they're only considered listeners if they were not slaves.
They changed their name. They were singers, and then the idea of them changing their name to listeners was like, we were listening to the old songs and keeping them in our memory, but not acting on them. So they called themselves listeners as more of like, they figured that was like their ceremonial position or something. Like, that's what they had become. But overall, they would be called singers. Kaladin is struggling with the notion that there's good people on both sides. And when his whole thing is, I will protect those who cannot protect themselves, that doesn't leave any room for if the other side is right, you know? If the other side also needs protecting, what do you do then? Which is the challenge of the Windrunners, what they have to resolve as they advance through their oaths. And I really like this with Kaladin. Because I was worried afterwards of Radiance. I was like, oh, okay, are we just going to go around and start murdering all these people? And it's like, no, there's still nuance. Don't worry. Anyways, the next chapter is titled Chapter 21, Set Up to Fail. It has Shallan's symbol, and the epigraph reads, I am no storyteller to entertain you with whimsical yarns. From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan woke up to Adolin knocking on her door. Pelona said you weren't feeling well, Adolin said. Blarg. Is it, girl stuff? Girl stuff, she said flatly. You know, when you, I'm aware of the biology, Adolin, thank you. Why is it that every time a woman is feeling a little odd, men are so quick to blame her cycle? As if she's suddenly unable to control herself because she has some pains. Nobody thinks that for men. Oh, stay away from Vinar today. He sparred too much yesterday, so his muscles are sore, and he's likely to rip your head off. So it's our fault. Yes, like everything else. War, famine, bad hair. Wait, bad hair? Loud, stubborn, oblivious to our attempts to fix it. The Almighty gave us messy hair to prepare us for living with men. Shallan hadn't had enough Stormlight the previous night to fully heal herself from the alcohol and was pretty hungover. So what is wrong? Girl stuff, she lied. See, I don't think men would blame your cycle nearly as much if you all didn't do the same. I've courted my share of women and I once kept track. Dili was once sick for womanly reasons 4 times in the same month. We're very mysterious creatures. He sniffs the jug she took from the bar last night and is shocked that she had been drinking Horneater White. She tells him about her investigation in the breakaway, and when he worries about her, she points out that she can literally survive being stabbed through the chest. Oh, right. It's kind of easy to forget. He frowned. So, wait, you could survive all kinds of nasty murder, but you still get menstrual cramps? Yeah. Mother cultivation can be hateful. I'm an all-powerful, shard-blade-wielding pseudo-immortal, but nature still sends a friendly reminder every now and then to tell me I should be getting around to having children. No mating, Pattern buzzed softly on the wall. Shallan tells him how she can burn away intoxication with Stormlight and asks if he has any more since she used up all of hers. He tells her that he has a single one, and she tries to bat her eyelashes at him, though she isn't sure how to. He rolled his eyes and handed over the gemstone. She sucked in the light and suppressed it. She'd found that she could do that to prevent glowing or drawing attention. She'd done it as a child. Adolin mentions that she needs to be careful with her Stormlight since they're having trouble finding more infused spheres for her to practice with. It made her feel irresponsible for using it up the previous night to avoid getting drunk. She thanks Adolin for dragging her out of bed, and he says that he's hoping for some moral support. Adolin tells her that Dalinar persuaded Eli Sadeas to speak with him so he can find more clues about Sadeas' death. He asks her to go with him, and she agrees. An hour later, Shallan finally left her room after pulling herself together. Adolin was lost in contemplation, and Sabariel and Pallona were lying on their stomachs getting massages. Sabariel mentions that he has a plan on how to tax travel through the Oath Gates. He just needs Shallan and the other Radiants to get them all opened. She goes up to Adolin, and the two of them depart. The eight princedoms had settled into quarters on the second and third level of the tower. The first level was mostly reserved for markets and storage. There were still large sections of the first two levels unexplored, hidden sets of rooms. Exploration higher than the third floor had been halted, as they couldn't spare Stormlight to work the lifts. They leave Sabariel's quarter, passing through a makeshift checkpoint that had been created for the guards. As they passed, Gaz and Vata joined them. Adolin says that she's been neglecting the people she brought with her to the war camps, that if she didn't give them tasks and make them feel important, they would grow lazy. Shallan says that Adolin sounds like his father and promises to make sure that her men are treated better. Adolin wants to use a map to find their way through the third level, but Shallan is easily able to find her way using the strata in the walls, which is like, if you don't know, the layering of the rock. She's able to use that to find her way through the tower.
That's weird.
It is. Adolin asks if she meant it, that he's like his father, and Shallan says they're both moral, just, and capable. She sees that he's got some serious daddy issues and worries that he can't live up to his father's expectations. She also sees that there's something else bothering him, but wants to keep it a mystery for her to figure out by herself instead of him just telling her. They enter Sadeas' quarter, and the difference is immediate. There are far more soldiers, and they were all dirty and angry, like they'd stepped from law into disorder. It was louder here, and even the stripes painted to guide people's ways had been done on the walls instead of the floor, causing the paint to drip and smear. The soldiers glance at Adolin, and Shallan feels like they more closely resemble gangs than soldiers. She'd hoped that maybe, now that the truth about the desolation had been revealed, Dalinar would have an easier time of uniting the High Princes. Well, that obviously wasn't going to happen while these men blamed Dalinar for Sadeas' death. They eventually reached the proper rooms and were ushered in to confront Sadeas' wife. Eli was a short woman with thick lips and green eyes. She sat in a throne at the center of the room. Standing beside her was Marais, one of the leaders of the Ghostbloods. And that is the end of the chapter.
Interesting. Uh-oh. Have fun, Shallan.
Chapter 22, The Darkness Within. It has Shallan's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "I am no philosopher to intrigue you with piercing questions." From Oathbringer, Preface. Marais. He wore a Sadeas uniform like the other soldiers, but stood out thanks to a green chicken with a wicked beak that sat on his shoulder. Now.
I'm sorry, wait. Chickens? They only have chickens in chin, but
so
I don't think they have green chickens.
So, this is the part where I need to tell you that every time I have said chickens, it's not really a chicken. There are chickens. But there's also other types of birds. But anything that, like, resembles a bird, they just call a chicken. So I lied to you. I just remembered reading this that I pulled an image.
Wait, is it a parrot?
It is a parrot.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to send you an image. I forgot I had this image. It's not in the book, but it's fan art of Marais so that you can get a better idea of what I'm showing you right now or what I'm telling you about right now. That's Marais with his parrot.
That is wonderful.
Yes. So this is the part where I tell you the other part of what's happening here, because we're not, if we ever cover what's happening here from like the wider Cosmere point of view, it won't be until way later. So I'm just going to tell you about it now. So there is a short story called Sixth of the Dusk, and this chicken is what is called an aviar, and they are birds from another planet that have magical abilities. I'm not going to get super into the mechanics of how they work, but they can share their abilities through a bond with humans that is similar but not as strong as the Nahel bond between human and Spren. So,
but what is their abilities?
I'm not sure what Marais's parrot or what Marais's AVR's ability is. They're all unique, if I remember correctly. And I don't want to get super into the mechanics of how it works, but just note that parrot has magic abilities, can form a bond that is not as strong as the Spren bond, but is similar to it. And can give the abilities to a human through that bond. So Marais has one of these.
Interesting.
Eli makes some vague insinuations that Adolin is returning to the scene of the murder, Adolin presses that they are taking the murder of her husband very seriously and asks if she can think of anybody with opportunity and motive to have killed Sadeus. She continues to cast blame at him and his father, and Adolin says that his mother had told him that Eli was clever, that she had admired her. Adolin says that they both know that Dalinar had no reason to assassinate Sadeus after the Voidbringers had shown themselves. Eli tells Moraes to get Adolin a chair and orders Shallan to get them tea. Shallan bristles at the command but goes anyways so she can get Moraes alone. She follows him into another room and asks him what he's doing. He says that the Ghostbloods have an interest in Eli. Moraes says that morality is unimportant to the Ghostbloods. Loyalty and power are all that matters, something that Shallan will see as she works with them. She says that she isn't one of them, and he brings up her using the symbol in her investigation the night before. He says that as long as she does not abuse her status, she is allowed to use her place in the Ghostbloods to help her in her investigations. Shallan asks about her brothers, and Moraes tells her that it's only been a few weeks and she has to be patient. He tells her that he has a task for her, which angers Shallan as she reminds him that they had Jasnah killed. He points out that Jasnah had been an enemy combatant, and what they did was no different than what Dalinar had done when uniting Alethkar. "Your task," Moraes said, "is to secure this location. Yurithiru must remain strong if we are to properly use the advent of the Voidbringers."
"Use them?"
"Yes. This is a power we will control, but we must not let either side gain dominance yet. Secure Yurithiru, hunt the source of the darkness you feel, and expunge it. This is your task, and for it I will give payment in information." He leaned closer to her and spoke a single word. "Helluran." He lifted the chair and walked out. Shallan stood there, stunned. Helluran. Her eldest brother had died in Alethkar, where he'd been for mysterious reasons. Shallan poured herself and Adolin cups of tea, then grabbed a chair under her arm. She sat down beside Adolin, then handed him a cup.
I hope he doesn't tell her. I hope he doesn't tell her.
"Why was Helluran in Alethkar?"
"Oh, well, why he was in Alethkar, I'd like to know. I just would
but
not...
the other part?
I don't want him to tell her who killed him.
Yeah.
Please. I mean,
She sat down, yeah.
I mean, I figure Shallan will be mad, but also, given time, she would probably understand. Like, he came to murder my people, and he killed all my friends, so I killed him."
Mm-hmm. She sat down beside Adolin, then handed him a cup. She took a sip and smiled at Eli, who glared at her. Eli tells Adolin that she doesn't think that Dalinar had Sadeus killed, but that she believes that one of his soldiers might have done it, thinking they were doing Dalinar a service. "Damn, Eli, you fucking nailed it!" She asks Adolin to share what he discovers so that she can share it with her own investigator. Adolin asks who her investigator is so he can send them reports. "His name is Meridas Amaram. I believe you know him." Shallan gaped. "Amaram? High Marshal Amaram?" "Of course," Eli said. "He is among my husband's most acclaimed generals." "Amaram. He'd killed her brother." She glanced at Moraes, who kept his expression neutral. Storms. What did he know? She still didn't understand where Helluran had gotten his shard blade. What had led him to clash with Amaram in the first place? Eli says that Amaram had just arrived at Yurithiru and had made his presence known to her alone. He had been caught out in one of the storms, and they were tending to him until he was strong enough to investigate Sadeus's murder. Adolin and Shallan left the room. "Amaram," Adolin hissed. "Bridgeboy isn't going to be happy about this. They have a vendetta, those two. Not just Kaladin. Father originally appointed Amaram to refound the Knights Radiant. If Eli has taken him in after he was so soundly discredited, the mere act of it calls Father a liar, doesn't it? Shallan?" She shook herself and took a deep breath. Helluran was long dead. She would worry about getting answers from Moraes later. Shallan says that Eli is reinforcing her side as an alternative to Dalinar. Adolin had hoped things would get easier without Sadeus, and he's worried that he's going to ruin everything. She tells him that she thinks he's right about there being multiple killers. She tells him that she'd heard some things while out the night before. The guards start moving around frantically, and when Adolin asks one what is happening, they say that the first high storm since the Battle of Narok has been spotted. And that is the end of the chapter. Chapter 23 is titled Storming Strange, and it has Kaladin's symbol. The epigraph reads, "I am no poet to delight you with clever illusions." From Oathbringer Preface. Kaladin is paying a light eyes to rent a storm bunker for the coming high storm. He pretends that he's negotiating on behalf of a Bright Lord, hiding that he intends to shelter the Parshmen there. The man says that he had offered the place to some caravans, but all three had gone silent. They had been supposed to come from Revelar, this largest city between here and Kolinar. He offers the place to Kaladin instead. Kaladin agrees, and they talk about the Evastorm, which had hit again the day before. The storm's second occurrence. Kaladin and the Parshman had been warned of its coming by the Voidspren leading them. Kaladin insists that the man cannot watch his Bright Lord's army arrive, threatening him subtly. The man agreed. As he headed back to the Parshman, he looked around for Syl, but she was hidden somewhere. The Voidspren had been following him to make sure he didn't do anything underhanded. Kaladin and the Parshman made it into the bunker right before the storm. They picked up other groups the last few days, each led by unseen Voidspren that had left once the groups had joined together. They had nearly 100 now, and nobody would tell Kaladin where they were going. Only that the Spren had a plan. "You did well, human," Ken said to Kaladin. "I'll speak for you when we reach the gathering." "Thanks," Kaladin said. Outside, the storm wall hit the bunker. The Parshman settled down to wait. Hesh dug into the sacks and inspected the vegetables with a critical eye. She'd worked the kitchens of a manor. Kaladin settled with his back to the wall. The storm would renew the gems outside, which included not only spheres, but the larger gemstones he'd been carrying. He needed to make a decision. How long could he delay flying back to the Shattered Plains? He couldn't dally forever. What were they doing at Urithiru? What was the word from the rest of the world? Once he had been happy to worry only about his squadron. After that, he'd been willing to look after a battalion. Since when did the state of the entire world become his concern? He sees something at the edge of his vision, assuming it to be Syl. When he turns, he finds a tiny glowing yellow woman standing on a large glowing yellow pillar of stone. Kaladin jumped, which caused the little Spren to smile. I can see you. Because I want you to, she said. You are an odd one. Why do you want me to see you? So we can talk, she started to stroll around him. Why are you still here, human? Your Parshman took me captive. Your mother teach you to lie like that? They're less than a month old. Congratulations on fooling them. She stopped and smiled at him. I'm a tad older than a month. The world is changing, Kaladin said. The country is in upheaval. I guess I want to see where this goes. She contemplated him. Would you fight for us, deserter? She asked. Would I be allowed? My kind aren't nearly as inclined toward discrimination as yours. If you can carry a spear and take orders, then I certainly wouldn't turn you away. She folded her arms. The decision won't be mine. I am but a messenger. Where can I find out for certain? At our destination. Which is? Close enough. Why? You have pressing appointments elsewhere? Off for a beard trim, perhaps? Or a lunch date with your grandmother? Kaladin rubbed at his face. Tell me, how did you know that there would be a high storm tonight? Felt it, Kaladin said, in my bones. Humans cannot feel storms, regardless of the body part in question. He shrugged. Seemed like the right time for one, with the weeping having stopped and all. She didn't nod or give any visible sign of what she thought of that comment. She merely held her knowing smile, then faded from his view. And that is where the chapter ends.
Interesting.
I'm sure that's going to be fine. All right, we got one more chapter tonight. Chapter 24, Men of Blood and Sorrow. It has Dalinar's symbol, and the epigraph reads, I have no doubt that you are smarter than I am. I can only relate what happened, what I have done, and then let you draw conclusions. From Oathbringer, Preface. Dalinar remembered. Her name had been Evie. She'd been quiet, shy. They'd brought Shardplate, and that was all that had emerged over the last few days. The rest was still a blur. He could recall meeting Evie, courting her, and eventually entering into a casual betrothal. He didn't remember love, but he did remember attraction. The memories brought questions. He ignored them, standing straight-backed with a line of guards on the field in front of Urithiru. The plateau they stood on would soon become a lumberyard. Nearby, a group of Windspren flew by, all shaped like little people. He wondered why he was remembering Evie, and why they were only the earliest memories. He had always remembered the difficult years following Evie's death. He assumed that he'd gone to the Night Watcher to be rid of the pain at losing her, and the Spren had taken his other memories as a payment. He didn't know for certain, but that seemed right. Bargains with the Night Watcher were supposed to be permanent. Dalinar checked his watch. With a bright flash, an expanding wave of stormlight spread outward from the center of the second platform from the left. When the light faded, Dalinar led his troop of honor guards up the wide steps to the top. They crossed to the building at the center, where a small group of people had stepped out. Taravangian leads the newcomers and is accompanied by his head scribe, Adratagia. Dalinar thinks about how people believe
Is that the herald? Oh, wait, no, that we met them, didn't we?
Who?
Taravangian and his scribe in that one viewpoint.
Yes, in the one interlude, yeah.
It's not the herald,
The one
right?
that Shallan saw?
Is it the herald?
That Shallan saw?
Yeah.
No.
Is it a different Harold?
Rafo. Dalinar thinks about how people believe either Adratagir or the other head scribe to be the true power behind Cobranth. That Taravangian was just a figurehead. Dalinar is fine working through Taravangian and is fond of the man as he'd been friends with Gavilar. Taravangian has to be reminded of what to say by Adratagir. Blackthorn.
He's having a dumb day today, I guess.
Yes, he is.
Aww,
it is an honor to meet you again. It has been too long. Your Majesty, Dalinar said, thank you so much for responding to my call. Dalinar thinks that the last time he had met Taravangian, the man had been quiet and intelligent. He believes that 5 years earlier, Taravangian had been struck ill and left with limited mental capacities. So that gives us a time frame of when Taravangian had gone to the Night Watcher. About 5 years earlier. Adratagir nods to a nearby middle-aged light-eyed woman who wore gloves. The strange woman stretched her right hand over her head, and a shard blade appeared in it. She rested it with the flat side against her shoulder. Ah, yes, Taravangian said. Introductions. Blackthorn, this is the newest Knight Radiant, Malata of Yakaved. Taravangian is awed by the lift in the center of Urithiru, acting like a child as he leans over the edge to look around.
Aww.
Dalinar explains that their engineers
believe.
Yeah, he mansplains. Dalinar explains that their engineers believe that the device is operated by conjoined fabrials, like the stuff they use at the end of Words of Radiance to make the tarp float to give them like cover.
Except
from the
rain. Really advanced.
Really on a whole nother level. Taravangian seems to not understand this, but takes away that it's powered by Stormlight. In Alethkar, Taravangian would have been removed from the throne after his illness. In Carbranth, his reign made much more sense. Dalinar thinks it must have been a major twist of luck that Taravangian had managed to be crowned King of Yakaved. Dalinar intended to help him hold the throne.
Uh-huh.
I hope you're ready for lots of Dalinar underestimating Taravangian for the rest of this book.
Oh, Dalinar, you sweet, sweet man. You, well, not sweet, but you, you naive man.
Dalinar asks how well guarded Vaidenar is, which is the capital city of Yakaved, and Adratagir says that they had been able to repel the Parshmen who had withdrew east towards Alethkar. Taravangian again looked out into the wide central column. Ah, how I wish this day hadn't come. You sound as if you anticipated it, Your Majesty. Taravangian laughed softly. Don't you anticipate sorrow, I mean? Sadness? Loss? I try not to hasten my expectations in either direction. The soldier's way. Deal with today's problems, then sleep and deal with tomorrow's problems tomorrow. Taravangian nodded. I remember, as a child, listening to an ardent pray to the Almighty on my behalf as glyph wards burned nearby. I remember thinking, surely the sorrows can't be past us. Surely the evils didn't actually end. If they had, wouldn't we be back in the Tranquiline halls even now? He looked toward Dalinar, and surprisingly there were tears in his pale gray eyes. I do not think you and I are destined for such a glorious place. Men of blood and sorrow don't get an ending like that, Dalinar Kullin. Dalinar found himself without a reply. Adratagir gripped Taravangian on the forearm with a comforting gesture, and the old king turned away, hiding his emotional outburst. Dalinar and Taravangian's dynamic throughout this book is one of my favorites. It's really good. They rode the rest of the way in silence. Yes?
Basically, Taravangian's just going to say a lot of random philosophical stuff, and Dalinar's going to be like, what the fuck was that?
Or he's going to be really fucking smart and, like, evil, and Dalinar's going to be like, whoa, dude, calm down. Whoa.
Yep.
Yeah, the way Dalinar
either
interprets-
he's dumb and philosophical, or he's smart and kind of freaky.
Yeah, kind of ruthless. And the way that Dalinar interprets those swings is very interesting. They rode the rest of the way in silence, with Dalinar watching the new Radiant. She hadn't spoken much and seemed to have a hint of a smile on her lips the whole time. Navani met them at the top, greeting Taravangian and Adratagir. Teshuv appeared to give the newcomers a tour of the top room, while Dalinar and Navani slipped away to speak. Dalinar says that Taravangian has become an idiot, and Navani says that they have enough clever people. Taravangian had been a friend during Gavilar's reign. Dalinar asks after Kaladin, and she says that there's still not been any response. Navani asks him about Malata, and he says that she's a releaser. Their official title was Dustbringer, but her spren had told her that they don't like that title. He finds her off-putting, but Navani asks if a Radiant could even be untrustworthy. Dalinar and Navani followed the group as they continued their tour, and he began to remember a day where he had almost lost his jealousy over, or where he had almost let his jealousy over Navani push him too far. Suddenly, Evie began to slip into that memory. He tells Navani that he assumes eventually all his memories will return. She says that she's looked into 300 cases, and in every single one, the magic had never worn off. He thanks her for sharing the burden with him and confirms that the change hadn't come from his bond with the Stormfather. The Spren was becoming annoyed that Navani kept asking. She wants him to recount his visit to see if something had been different, but he says that the memory hasn't returned yet. He only remembers a valley with lots of plants. He remembers asking for his pain to be taken, and he thinks she took his memories too. Taravangian and Adratagir rejoined them and asked about the other monarchs. They informed the two that so far they are the only to have agreed to come.
Wait, so her taking the memories was both his boon and his curse?
That's how he perceives the boon is taking his memories, the boon is taking his pain at the feeling, and the curse, as he interprets it, is
taking the memory.
Yes.
So now yes, all the memories are coming back, which means he's going to go through all that pain again.
But why?
Yeah, what's going on with the Night Watcher?
All good questions.
Something weird is happening. Something very weird.
You will be able to get an answer by the end of this book.
That's not good enough.
Navani says that they've received a new message from the Tukari God King, who they had been trying to contact for a while now. And she reads it, and I'm just going to read what he said in his message. A warning from Tezim the Great, last and first man, herald of heralds, and bearer of the Oath Pact. His grandness, immortality, and power be praised. Lift up your heads and hear, men of the East, of your God's proclamation. None are radiant but him. His fury is ignited by your pitiful claims, and your unlawful capture of his holy city is an act of rebellion, depravity, and wickedness. Open your gates, men of the East, to his righteous soldiers, and deliver unto them your spoils. Renounce your foolish claims and swear yourselves to him. The judgment of the final storm has come to destroy all men, and only his path will lead to deliverance. He deigns to send you this single mandate, and will not speak it again. Even this is far above what your carnal natures deserve.
Lovely.
What a nice message. What a lovely man. Navani says that she'd rather have the Imuli anyways, as their soldiers aren't crazy. Taravangian asks if they're alone, and Dalinar tells him that the end of the world has come, and still nobody will listen. Taravangian immediately is like, okay then, what's the plan for world domination? And starts going over the different strategic starting points for conquering the nations that won't listen. Dalinar sees this as the man assuming that the Alethi were unwilling to take no for an answer, and he assumes that the king had only come because he thought that Dalinar would send his armies to Yakaved first. We're not going to attack anyone. Yeah, I mean, it is a correct assumption to make if Taravangian was not insane.
And also you know? A genius.
And a genius at the same time. Well, not at the same time. Well, yes, at the same time, but fluctuating as well.
Yeah. The spectrum of insane genius.
Yeah.
Mad genius.
We're not going to attack anyone. Our focus is on the Voidbringers, the true enemy. We will win the other kingdoms with diplomacy. Taravangian frowned. But Adratagia quieted him. Of course, Bright Lord, we understand. She thought he was lying. What would he do if nobody listened? How would he save Roshar without the Oath Gates, without resources? He'd been willing to conquer Alethkar for its own good. He'd been willing to seize the kingship in all but name, only again for the good of the people. How far would he go for the good of all Roshar? How far would he go to prepare them for the coming of that enemy, a champion with nine shadows? I will unite instead of divide. He found himself standing at that window beside Taravangian, staring out over the mountains, his memories of Evie carrying with them a fresh and dangerous perspective. And that is where we will stop for tonight.
Is something happening to the Night Watcher? Did someone make a pact with her and then is starting to break it, so now she's suffering because of it?
Who knows? Who knows what's happening with the Night Watcher? But like Navani told Dalinar that she's so far studied 300 cases, and in all of them, the magic lasted until death. So Lift and Dalinar are isolated incidents.
But but they're happening at the same time. Is it... Oh. Is it maybe because they're Radiance, so they're packed with the Night Watcher and they're packed with their Spren are kind of, like, incompatible? And so as they more, like, say their oaths, the power of their pact with the Night Watcher is less, like, potent.
Rafa. I'm not gonna touch what's happening here. If it wasn't so explicitly spelled out by the end of the book, I'd play along the lines a little bit more, but this is something that will be answered. So you are theorizing in great directions and continue to do so. Next time.
Well, that would also explain why so far there hadn't been any records, because there haven't been any other Radiants that made pacts with the with the Night Watcher in, like, on record in living memory. So
yeah, because all of their records of the Radiants were destroyed, so there would be no records of the times before the Recreants, really.
Exactly. So they would have no idea, and so obviously they wouldn't be able to find any records of such a thing happening, which explains a lot.
What I would
I know you can't say, but, like, that's what I think is happening right
now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I will point out.
So the Night Watcher, what the Night Watcher is doing, right, essentially, is Cultivation's investiture, right? It's Cultivation's magic. And what the Radiants are doing is essentially
honors
magic.
And are you not able to, like, overlap the two magics?
So here's what I was about to bring up. Hoid has on screen used Allomancy on Shallan, and we also know that Hoid has perfect pitch through breaths from Naltis. So Hoid has both investiture from Scadrial, from Mistborn, and investiture from Endowment in Warbreaker. So
okay, so then it's not
least
that
those two don't.
Do Cultivation and Honor have, like, opposing views, and so they wouldn't want their magic to overlap? Or maybe the Night Watcher herself is very much like, I honor Cultivation, I don't honor Honor. So if you devote yourself to Honor, then you don't get the magic from Cultivation.
So
it might be a Night Watcher specific thing.
I can tell you that Honor and Cultivation settled Roshar together, and that they Odium came later.
Well, yes, but
and Odium was the interloper. So at least Honor and Cultivation got along. Now, what I will also point out is that I think it was in Edge Dancer, Windle said that she has not been the same since he died.
Oh.
So something could be changing in relation to Honor's death.
Oh. So now that Honor's dead, Cultivation is like, ooh, I don't want anything to do with him. I don't want anything that reminds me of him.
Hmm. Possibly. There's a lot going on here.
Or maybe just specifically hostility towards Radiance, since they betrayed Honor and his wishes.
Mm-hmm. And we don't really know, we don't really know the degree of autonomy that the bigger Spren have from their shards that they're associated with. Like, the only time we've met the Stormfather is when Honor was already dead, right? So we don't know really how much autonomy the Stormfather had while Honor was still alive. So we don't know, like, the Night Watcher is as autonomous as the Stormfather is while Cultivation is still living, right? Then possibly this could be something related to the Night Watcher that the Night Watcher is doing on her own. But we also don't know, maybe there's less autonomy when the Shard is still alive. The Night Watcher might be more of a puppet.
Well, yeah, but also the Stormfather even has a level of not autonomy, because he has to accept Radiant Oath even if he doesn't want to.
That's true. He is bound by honor. He's bound by the rules of the shard.
Exactly. So even when honor's dead, he still can't choose not to do that.
And we're getting into, like, we're getting deep into Cosmere shit. But, like, even though honor is gone, technically, honor still has to be around in a form, because investiture is pieces of shards, right? It's the magic.
Well, yeah, but Spren are pieces of honor.
As pieces of honor, exactly. So they would still be bound by, even though honor is dead, technically the bond, the bond honor still exists. The agreements made still permeate inside of them, because they are technically pieces of him. And shards are complicated entities. But yes. What'd you think of that message from the Tukari God Priest?
I remember like 5% of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What'd you think of his proclamation that he is last and first man, herald of heralds, and bearer of the Oath Pact?
That's funny.
Hmm. Now, here's my question to you. Who knows about the Oath Pact?
Only the Radiance and, like, maybe the Spren.
And even Radiance, like, Kaladin doesn't really know about the Oath Pact.
Well, and Herald.
Because of his experiences with the Stormfather and through the visions.
Yeah. Right? So it's like, it might be a Herald, but just his pure, like, self righteousness and just like, I am the greatest, honor me, is funny. Even if he is,
yes,
even if
yes,
it's real, it's still funny.
Just, I want you to be thinking about this guy, because he's not gonna come back up in this book, but we're gonna get back to him. We're seeding stuff, Mangle. We're seeding stuff.
I'm not
stuff.
Gonna remember him.
I know, just keep in the back of your mind that there's a crazy dude calling himself a herald in one of the other countries.
Well, herald and crazy is basically synonymous now. So.
That's true. But that doesn't mean that he's a herald. Like, the whole idea of the original version of Way of Kings was that Tolan was going to be the main character, and Tolan was going to be this crazy dude who didn't know, like, he thought he was a herald, but it was never going to be clear whether he actually was one. So a crazy person could just be going around saying that they're a herald, or it could be a crazy herald.
How many random crazy people know about the Oath Pact?
Maybe it's another bondsmith. Maybe it's another Radiant with a Spren that knows more.
Okay, but
could have learned.
Would that Radiant Spren be okay with them just being like, "Yep, I'm a herald"?
I think the Spren are very complex beings, and each of them kind of have their own thing. Even though they are extremes, they still have You keep in mind what Navani said, or what Navani didn't say, but I read that she questioned, can a Radiant be untrustworthy? You know, does a Spren being a Spren and a piece of honor immediately mean that, like, it's chill? Think about the Skybreakers. They're going around killing fledgling Radiants, and they're still bonding Spren.
Yeah.
These Spren are of honor, but they're chill with their Radiants murdering Spren. Anyways. Next time.
I mean, is it maybe because that's what the Herald is okay with?
Hmm.
And so,
who knows?
Because the Herald is directly recruiting people to be part of that team,
the Spren see it as okay?
Yeah.
Possibly.
It's like, well, if the Radiant of this is telling you, hey, you're this now, well, I guess they're this now.
Mm-hmm.
That, or he has the loyalty of Spren. And so those Spren are just willing to bond with whoever he tells them.
Next week.
Also, you said you didn't have any images for me, and then you gave me two.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. I only gave you one, right?
Oh, that other one was from before. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I forgot that because that's not in the book. I just pulled that so you could get a visual of what an AVR looks like. Mm-hmm. Next time, Shallan is going to tell us a story.
Okay.
For now, thanks everybody for listening. You guys can follow us on Twitter @SpeakStormlight. Email us @speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Our cover art was made by our goated friend Alex at Alex_BigBoy on Twitter. Links to all of these are in the episode description. As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. But remember, life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.